This is an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I want Rodney to hear this. Rodney, are you a religious person?
Somewhat, Art. I'm not a practicing. I don't go to church, but I have my own private religion that I continue to believe in.
Well, that makes two of us then. Yeah. Listen to this. It is from Pastor Bradley. Dear Art and Rodney, I know you don't like quoting from the Bible on your show, but there is a verse that describes precisely what your guest is talking about. It is described in the curse of the second bowl, which is found in Revelation 16:2, and reads, quote, "Then the second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it became blood as of a dead man, and every living creature in the sea died." The very next verse, number 4, describes the same thing being introduced into the fresh water system. Quote, "The third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood." Signed, Pastor Bradley. I'm not a strictly religious person by a long shot either, and I'm not sure how to approach what we're doing to ourselves right now, Rodney, but I don't know. That gives me sort of a nervous little tick.
It really does, too. I know that I was aware and excited by the recent sort of coalition building between environmentalists and theologians who do see a common cause in the preserving of the earth and being the steward of the earth. And I like hearing about that kind of coming together.
Well, let me tell you something. Politically, most of my life, I have been a conservative with libertarian leanings,
mm-hmm.
All right? And the traditional conservative position on environmental matters is BS. Mm-hmm. You know, it's BS, and all that matters is the economy. And I have come in the last several years to understand that it's not BS, that I'm afraid it's real. What we're doing to ourselves is now coming back to haunt us. It's what drove me to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's what drove you to write the book, isn't it?
In larger part, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's take a few more calls. First time caller line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker in L.A. Hi.
Hello, Art. Hi.
Where are you?
In Hannibal, Missouri, hometown of Mark Twain.
Yes, sir.
I used to live in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is right on the border of North and South Carolina, next to Charlotte, and the guy that called just a little while ago, I can back up what he said. The Catawba River, which ran, I'd say, maybe about half a block away from where my apartment was, had a very interesting occurrence, to say the least, happening there in the latter part of 93 going into 94.
What was that?
There were scores of fish that ended up on the banks of the rivers. On both sides, it was as if somebody had just plowed right down the center of it with a net or something and just shoved all the fish over to the side. I mean, there were thousands of them laying around.
Thousands.
The soil conservation people were running around telling people to keep away from the river, away from the fish, because they were rotting and it would get you sick and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But considering it was so close to my house, you know, I was wondering what the heck is going on with all the smell down there. I went to take a look, and I saw fish with the same kinds of signs and symptoms as what I've seen on the TV, the sores and stuff like that. There were kids that, during that same time frame, had been downriver playing around in the water,
mm-hmm.
and they had come down with meningitis, one of which was 17 years old, football star, no problems whatsoever health-wise, who died from it. You know, just boom, out of the clear blue, no rhyme, no reason. The health officials blew it off, and they would not admit, even when we called the CDC to say, look, are we in danger? Mm-hmm. Are we having an outbreak? What's going on? The people down there, up to and including Dr. David Thatcher, the director who I personally talked to about this, would not tell us anything. Just blew us off and said, oh, there's nothing to it, mm-hmm. which is typical of the downplaying of the usual government bureaucracy, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. I have got to somehow impress the audience with the urgency of this. 110 physicians from North Carolina wrote a letter to our vice president. That's 110 doctors in North Carolina. Would you read it one more time, please?
certainly will. Let me just say before I do, Art, that it's really amazing when you do something like this, the different stories you hear from people who have encountered something similar, whether it's this organism or not, but, I mean, who are frustrated by what has happened to the environment and the lack of response on the part of public health officials. This letter is to Dear Vice President Gore, it's from physicians of Craven County, North Carolina, and surrounding areas. It reads, physicians are usually notoriously uninvolved in political or environmental issues. An environmental issue is now, however, threatening the people of our community in Newbern, North Carolina, and nearby. As doctors, we feel the need to speak out as advocates of our patients to protect them from the possible health risk, which in this case involves exposure to our coastal waters. The pollution in our rivers has caused an overgrowth of several organisms, one known as Fisteria, implicated not only in fish kills, but mammalian neurologic dysfunction. And it goes on, it calls upon Vice President Al Gore to come in to support the governor. To me, it's a stunning rebuke to the public health system in North Carolina that they are going above them outside the state, appealing to Vice President Al Gore for help.
All right, now, suppose I lived in the state of Maine on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take it, I'm going to just give you a reaction. I'm going to say, look, fine, that's North Carolina's problem. That's not my problem. I don't care.
Well, I would say to them that that this organism has been found up and down the eastern seaboard. I would say to them that they should not be complacent just because they have not been impacted by this particular organism, because I think what this organism indicates is that our coastal waters are being changed by environmental and pollution pressures, and if it's not this organism, it very well easily could be another organism, and all the scientists are predicting that this is the direction we're moving in. There's going to be a global increase in these kind of pathogens, and they're going to be happening in Maine's waters sooner or later. And they've even had, there was a big incident up in Canada dealing with toxicity.
I just picked on Maine as a...
Yeah, I know, but I mean, so you are not immune simply because you live in those northern waters.
In other words, if we don't do something,
mm-hmm.
the ocean is literally going to be poisoned. Is poisoned a wrong word?
Well, no, it's not. No, it's not. I mean, there is a strong possibility that this kind of thing is going on elsewhere, and the organism just has not yet been identified.
All right, you heard the story. Maybe some of the audience mm-hmm. did not, that I just read,
mm-hmm.
Which just broke out of South Africa. There are some photographs on CNN or some video of it. An estimated 1,000 tons of crayfish have literally walked out of the ocean, worrying marine experts, I'm quoting from CNN, due to a red tide, trying to escape a red tide. And what you're talking about is a red tide, isn't it?
Well, the organism that I'm talking about in North Carolina is really a cousin to the organism that causes the red tide.
A nastier cousin?
Yes, it's a nastier cousin because it exhibits direct predatorial behavior, attacking fish, and the toxin appears to be more potent and more dangerous to humans than the one causing red tide.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. This is Robert in San Joaquin Valley.
Yes, sir.
First of all, that Golden Eagle food, I tried that. And they've come a long way from K-Rash.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I know.
Yes, good evening, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'm really enjoying hearing you. There's so many things I could ask you, but let me lump it all in one real quick, Art, and then I'll listen on the air.
Sure.
First of all, after I mentioned the main subject, I was hoping maybe you could tell us, seeing as we can't really depend on politicians and their agendas, what we could do to come together in hopes that we can turn things around.
Pressure.
Yeah, if it's not too little too late. But are you familiar with the red tide, the Salton Sea in Southern California?
Yeah. Go ahead and tell us more about it, though. I'd like to hear what you...
They've had it several times. I drove by there not too many years ago. All the fish were floating.
Mm-hmm.
The stench was terrible. The people were sick. The birds were getting sick.
Yeah, birds are falling out of the air.
Yes, sir. I was just wondering if you knew much about that and what the cause is.
Yeah. Well, I know that it's been linked to... what is called the fertilization of the coastal waters, which is causing various microorganism cells to turn toxic, and then it works its way up the food chain. And you've had that problem here. You had a die-off in 91 of pelicans that were feeding on anchovies that had then were feeding on toxic diatoms. And so California has had its bouts, as well as the whole Pacific Coast has, with these marine organisms turning toxic. And in this case, as we said, working its way up the food chain.
All right. I've got two reports here, one from MSNBC. Let me read it. At a conference in Brussels, insurance company scientists warn not only that climate is changing, but that resulting storms and other erratic weather could actually bankrupt the industry. A quote, it is feared that climate change will produce in nearly all regions of the world new extreme values of many insurance-relevant parameters that will lead to natural disasters of unprecedented severity and frequency. And now from CNN, McGinty, Clinton's point person on environmental issues, largely steered clear of the blame, commenting, focusing instead on the consequences of doing nothing. McGinty said, quote, as we see increasingly severe storms, we begin to get a glimpse of what a post-climate change world would look like. But I'm beginning to wonder if we're going to make it that far.
You know, when it comes to the environment, Art, we have relied on other species to be our early warning systems. That's why miners took canaries into the mines with them. When they stopped singing, they knew they had to have air problems. But the assumption is when the environment reaches a point where it can no longer support wildlife, that we will recognize that. We'll pay attention to it, and we will react to it. And, boy, some of the stories we've heard tonight, you hear about the frogs up in Minnesota and Wisconsin, I mean, growing legs out of different parts of their body.
Let me give you one that you might not know about.
Okay.
I live out here in the desert, Rodney, and Lake Mead is the big a drinking water supply for Las Vegas. And there were front page headlines about 2 months ago that said that the carp in Lake Mead were showing gross deformities. Now, bear in mind, this is in the drinking water of Las Vegas.
Well, you know, and Art, there are those who say, you know, it's not fair to extrapolate from other species to human health. I think that's the case I make in this book, is basically the line between us and them, between other species and people, has been crossed. The same things we're doing to the environment that are causing an organism to emerge as killing fish.
Well, why do they call it why do they call it the food chain? It's a food chain, right? We're at the top of it.
Oh, I see, yeah. I know.
Yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with first-time callers. Call area 702-727-1222. Hold it, Steve. We can't allow you to put a last name on the air.
Okay.
So let us begin again. Your name is Steve, and Steve, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. Two questions for you, and maybe a main concern. This, you said it's going might be going airborne, right?
No, it does. The toxin aerosolizes.
He is airborne.
It is airborne. All right. Being that I'm just about 2 minutes away from the ocean and a few minutes away from several of the branches off the Cape Fear River, is it possible that I could be affected? And if so, should I be in the thought of moving someplace else?
Oh, no, I wouldn't alarm there. First of all, we're talking about blooms of this organism. That's when you have concerns. When it blooms in the water, then, and the problem is, like a red tide, you don't get the discoloration. That's when the toxin aerosolizes. Into the ocean side, even though it has a salinity tolerance for the ocean, the churning of the waves, the turning over, makes it so that it's inhospitable for it. So on the exterior parts of the oceans, you don't need to worry. It has been found in the Cape Fear, yes. I would keep my, you know, attuned to the newspaper there. The Wilmington Star News is very good on this kind of thing. I was just in Wilmington last week, and you have a river keeper there who is monitoring this kind of situation, and I had a long conversation with him. So there will be those kind of alerts posting. He's going to be looking for it, too. So I would not consider moving at this time, no.
Okay.
I don't think you would. Again, I think you should become involved. And, I mean, stay in touch with your riverkeeper there.
All right. On the other hand, if he were to ask you, should I go swimming?
Cape Fear's got its problems too. I mean, all those coastal rivers, I mean, it's not one thing, it's another. There's been a variety of bacteria and organisms they've been found in those rivers. I don't think they're healthy places. I certainly wouldn't. I believe in informed consent, Art, and that's what makes me so angry here, is that the health and the environmental bureaucracies just don't have the information to be able to provide to citizens and consumers to make them feel meaningfully reassured of what they know what they're eating or what they're swimming in.
All right, caller. So the word is, you don't have to move, but stay informed.
Okay, one more quick question for you.
Sure.
How much do you think it's going to get worse?
All right. Again, that goes back to, if we do nothing,
what are
we facing?
Well, I can say to you this, is that there was, I mean, if we look back in time, the population sort of shifts move from rural to urban. Now the population shift is moving to the coastlines. You look at what states are growing the fastest. It is our coastal states, and that is clearly the target area. Those coastal waters are the breeding zones for these new organisms. The states are going to have more and more people to them as we put more and more pollution and population pressures.
All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. One is, are there any places one could go, I mean, aside from your book, obviously, which is a prime source of information,
mm-hmm.
which could be considered an official...
Yeah, I'm interested.
Research.
Yeah, there are. I mean, if you could look in my book, it refers to a Nature article, a scientific prestigious journal out of Britain, that was first published about this. I cannot refer you to any information in terms of the state officials in North Carolina. There are a couple of environmental groups, foundations that are clearinghouses for information. Perhaps if you wanted to call Art's producer back or Art back at a later time, I could give him those numbers. You could call them.
All right. In the meantime, we've got a related article now on our website, caller. So if you have a computer, it's www.artbell.com. All right, Rodney, sit tight. We'll be back to you in a moment. His book, And the Waters Turned to Blood. This is a very strange organism we are discussing that unfortunately... Well, it's now affecting the fish, but also is beginning to affect human beings. You might want to stick around and listen. I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC. Pollution more than I am this horrible little bug.
Well, you know, I really see when we talk about North Carolina as a signal event, sending up a flare for a lot of other states to see. And that's what my hope is. And that's why I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, Art, is to bring this issue to the attention of people around the country. Because, yes, we have a major problem in North Carolina, but other states are just standing in line. It's going to be coming their way.
All right. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hi, I'm Larry. I'm calling from Watertown, Wisconsin tonight. I've lived in western North Carolina for 13 years. They have a very large commercial fish farm industry in western North Carolina, rainbow trout,
right,
catfish. And I started, you know, I drove by one on the way home from work, so I have my wife, you know, I dip some out for the, have the guy dip some of the fish out for my wife. And her health has started to go downhill. And they've just opened a new fish market in town that she's been patronizing, and she's took very seriously ill. She's been eating Horn's Roughy and some other things, and I just spoke with her when the program came on. We have a lot of trouble getting you on the radio in western North Carolina in the mountains, and she's very ill. She's, you know, to the point she can't sleep, pains, or she's starting to become forgetful. She locked herself out of the house. They didn't even take a purse or keys, and you know how a woman is with her purse.
Well, these are symptoms typical of what Rodney has described. That doesn't mean that's what this is, though. Although it does sound eerily familiar, doesn't it, Rodney?
Yeah. Again, as we said, Archer, I mean, when you start writing about this kind of thing, you become, you hear all kinds of stories about people who are suffering from similar complaints. You know, I did a little research on the Internet with the CDC, and they have a site there talking about new and emerging infectious diseases, and under that is a paper that talks about how poorly equipped public health departments are to be able to discern these new waterborne diseases from all different sources, and that they just don't have the sophistication of to detect them. They don't test for them, and they really are crisis oriented, and they wait till just there's ongoing health problems before they'll finally react to a situation.
I know. Well, you're not a doctor, but what would you say to this fellow?
Boy, having gone through that, I mean, I hear so many stories of those people who have had that kind of thing. I just don't know any personal physicians. I just don't know what to say to this individual.
Caller, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
Sir,
is
there any danger of that organism being in the mountain streams in Western
Carolina? Let me reassure you about that. I mean, you may have other sources of pollution in your mountain streams, but in terms of Western or North Carolina, I mean, I know there's paper mills up there, and I know there's been some spraying up there, so that might be the source of your problem. This particular organism, no. I don't want to alarm you about it. That doesn't seem to be, I mean, you don't need to worry about this causing those problems.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
My name is Francis. I'm calling from Grass Valley, California. I'm listening on KNCO.
Okay.
And I have a couple. I'm an activist over in my area with the Green Party, and my point is, I'd like to request that the letter that the doctors get put on the website so that people could have access to that. I think it's valuable information for people
around
the country.
Too.
I do too. I'll tell you what, Rodney, if you will supply it to me,
okay.
I will see to it that it gets on the website.
Okay. I'll be glad to do that, Art.
All right, caller?
Sir, I have another quick request.
Yeah.
Another quick comment. May I?
Yes.
A while back, you had this is a quick comment, you had this game you play called If I Were a Dictator. Well, if I were a dictator, whenever someone, a certain conservative radio talk show host used the term environmental wacko,
yeah,
I would have him castrated.
All right, well, I'm sorry. My views have, what would be the right word? They've gone past any political concerns or beliefs that I had, and I have embraced because of scientific fact that a lot of people are just ignoring right now about what's going on with our environment. I have begun to realize, as many, many, many others have, that we are really screwing up the place we live in.
Yeah, you know, Art, I was asked on a program, like, why, actually, I think it was Good Morning America, well, you know, why would not health officials react? And, I mean, it's difficult to answer that because you think this is their job. And, it's a complex mix of motives, but one of the things that I think that I encountered in this book, and I think it's part of one of the, in fact, it is one of the themes of the book, and that is how much information is enough. And, I mean, I think that a lot of our health departments, you know, their demand for scientific certainty is beyond reason, beyond common sense. They want absolute scientific consensus. They want perfect information, and you're never going to get that. And I understand, you know, to run the engines of environmental protection cost money. You need to have information because industries can bring lawsuits unless you can back up regulations. But nevertheless, I mean, there reaches a point where if you're going to err, you're going to err on the side of protecting public health. And I find that a lot of these public health agencies are just so conservative in their demand for more and more science just to avoid those tough political and economic consequences.
You nevertheless have a lot of science behind what you have written, don't you?
I issued a challenge to that public health department, to the environmental agency there, the Division of Environmental Management. If you have any disagreement with the contentions in my book, let's sit down and let's select a major newspaper. I chose the News and Observer from Raleigh, but I said anyone you want, and I'll present my data and my information and my sources, and you present yours. And let's have the public decide. And I have had nobody take me up on that challenge. And I know someone from the governor's office went to the health department to say, what are your problems with this? And they tried to nickel dime me. But it was little things that had no consequence to the serious challenges there. And she was completely, appalled and went back and actually reported that to the governor.
And now, back to the best of Art Bell.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to be talking to you. I'm from Tempe, Arizona. My name is Ellen.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I couldn't believe what Mr. Barker, is that correct?
Yes.
Was saying. I was just driving home. It's almost the same here in Arizona. The denial until there were actual dead bodies in this case, and overwhelmingly so. There was a circuit board manufacturer that blew up in a minority neighborhood, which, of course, the neighborhood wasn't aware of what was being done in there. It created a massive fire 4 years ago. We now have about 40 people dead on the same street that was downwind from the fire, and 8 right away. When the people were let back into their area, it was a poor evacuation coordination. They didn't have one, basically, and they were let back in too soon. But they came back to their dead animals and dead plants on their lawn.
That's the kind of message.
Yeah, that would prove not only overwhelming scientific evidence, but they went on to say, the Arizona State Health Department and the Maricopa County Health Department, that they were just imagining these symptoms, and the deaths were normal, and the kids started to get sick. And now, you know, down there, it's very, very common for kids to have their hair falling out, and they don't think it's uncommon down there.
So, in other words, the point you're making is that the bureaucracy treated that incident just the way they're treating what's going on in North Carolina right now.
Exactly. Not only did we have scientific information that the symptoms were all linked together and not from sick house syndrome, not because African Americans have bad diets, and they even had the nerve to say that, but because we had many dead people, and what they were saying was, well, they were very old and they were going to die. Well, those are the most vulnerable people.
Of course.
And
the young and the old.
And then when we went further to the federal level, and I petitioned the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry to do a public health survey, they were being told by our state agency that they had it under control. Finally, 4 years later, 80 deaths and many sick, we finally got the Region 9 director to come down and listen to this.
All right. Well, does that all sound familiar?
That pattern is repeated again and again. And I mean, in some respects, this is an old story. And that's where I think sometimes it takes a book, a catalyst for the kind of changes bringing to that national attention. I mean, and this woman's story sounds very familiar. And again, I recognize the pattern. Thanks for sharing it with us.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hello.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Well, you're listening.
This is Harold in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and I had one quick question. I'll get off and listen to the answer on the air. But we have down here an epidemic of rabies in the possum and raccoon population, and I was just curious to know if, by chance, this bug in the water is what's causing the rabies epidemic.
No, absolutely not. We really have to be careful, because if we're talking about demand for response to the science here, we have to be scientifically.
Yeah, everybody begins to blame it on everything.
Right, yeah, that's a danger. In fact, I was just in Jacksonville, and by the way, I'm being interviewed by Jacksonville Radio tomorrow morning at about 6:30. but no, don't worry about the rabies. This this organism have no connection whatsoever. So.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hi, this is Steve in New Orleans.
Hello, Steve.
And
I know New Orleans has its own problems.
Yes. In fact, I'd like to ask your guest, several times over the past 5 to 10 years, there's been a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico off the Louisiana coast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this zone has been growing in size, and what I read from a newspaper was that it might be caused by fertilizer, which was carried down to Mississippi and dumped into the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to ask your guest if he knows if that is accurate or if there might be some type of organism involved.
Rodney?
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I don't want to overspeak my knowledge here. Certainly, the waters that you're talking about are prime candidates for what we're talking about. I mean, think about it, with all the different basins that the Mississippi flushes. So whether you're talking about a specific chemical contaminant in there that is causing those dead zones, whether you're talking about the changing environmental conditions that have given birth to organisms that are causing that, I really can't speak to. But you know, this is, I mean, either way, it wouldn't
doesn't surprise me. And I know those are the waters that are going to be tested next for this organism. I know we've talked to Dr. Burkholder, who's a scientist here.
All right. The name of this organism again, please.
The name of the organism is Fisteria piscicida. It translates from Latin to fish killer.
Fish killer. And it has caused fish to have open sores.
Open sores. It causes them to muscle paralysis, and they die from the neurotoxin. They've been dying by the millions in the waters of North Carolina.
By the millions.
Yeah, and that. And again, this toxin just doesn't stop at fish. Not only does it affect the waters, but it affects almost like a poisonous vapor over the where these fish kills take place, and people entering those zones are susceptible to.
So a very dangerous time would be when it's hot, when there's a bloom of this.
Yeah.
Then it would be misty. It would be airborne.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know necessarily. I mean, if you're looking on the surface for a fish with holes in it to tell you, that's not what the sign is. I mean, those fish could be disturbed down below. It could be in the early state of a bloom. It could be after that. So you can't tell by looking at the waters whether it's active and whether it's dangerous.
And again, the effect on human beings is?
The effect on human beings is not completely understood, but it's all bad news.
But the symptoms?
The symptoms would be similar to premature Alzheimer's, cognitive difficulty. It seems like multiple sclerosis. And cognitive impairment and more to be told.
And immune deficiencies.
And immune deficiency, but that's what's so hard, is that if it's immune deficiency, then you could be exhibiting a whole range of symptoms that don't have the signature of this organism, and you wouldn't know what's causing it.
All right. Let's take a couple more calls, and that's about all we're going to have time for. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi. West of the Rockies, are you there? East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Good morning.
Yes, this is Charles from Maine.
Yes, Charles.
Yes, I was wondering if this bug were to infect a human or whatever, like, is there any chance of a sore, like, on the fish?
If it were a bug to affect a human, is there a chance of sores on the fish? I'm sorry, I'm not understanding.
I don't follow that either.
Like, would the human get the sore? You know, as a symptom.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the humans exposed to the toxin. See, I mean, what makes this so difficult is that we can't say to you, like, in the auto industry, if you're exposed to benzene, you get a specific kind of cancer. The range of toxins have not been clearly identified. The range of human health effects haven't been clearly identified. So there's all kinds of possible symptoms. Well, the symptoms we're describing today are the ones that are known. But until that toxin is studied, until we come up with a set of clinical symptoms associated with it, you know, we really just don't know. The sores on the hands are one indication, and they do not respond to antibiotics. They are slow to heal, and they would be a symptom. But up in Maine, there could be a lot of other things that are causing it, too.
All right. Rodney, we're going to have to stop it here. But your book and The Waters Turned Blood is generally available, right?
Generally available across the country yard. And let me say, this has been a public service, and I can't thank you enough for allowing me to bring it to your audience.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time after a busy book signing to be here. Rodney.
Well, and it sounds like we're thinking along the same lines, and I'm anxious to read The Quickening.
I'll arrange it. Thank you, Rodney.
Thank you, Art.
Take care. That's Rodney Barker, folks, and his book again, And the Waters Turned Blood. Now, it's one more indication of exactly what I have written about in my book, which is called The Quickening. It documents the weather changes, the geographic changes, the social changes, the economic changes, changes in literally every aspect of human endeavor, the exponential quickening, what's going on. It is, I suspect, the best book I will ever have written. It is 336 pages, available hardcover only. And I'm going to give you a phone number to order it, but the lines are hopelessly gridlocked. And the best time to call is after 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. My book is available as of today. Now, if you want a first edition signed, autographed copy. Now, let me explain this to you, okay? Because last time, there were many people screeching about this. I am going to sign copies for as long as I can humanly do it. And then I am going to stop. I'm not putting an actual cutoff date on this. I'll just sign until I get sick of signing, okay? And then you will not be able to get a signed copy. So that's the deal, and I'm going to give you the phone number right now. You can try it right now. You might get lucky and get through, but my guess is after 8 o'clock in the morning, you'd have a better chance. All I did was mention it on Dreamland, and it went into utter complete gridlock yesterday. So you can give it a try. The number is 1-800-864-7991. I have mixed feelings about the effect this, I know the effect this book is going to have. It's going to shock and anger a lot of people. But what you will find in it is documented and true. If you're not the kind of person who puts their head into the sand, then this is a book you definitely want to read. The Quickening is out as of tonight, today, actually yesterday now. The number to call is 1-800-864-7991. And I'll be interested, by the way, they ship out right away. They've got them to ship. No pre orders this time, like with my last book. They're ready to ship as soon as you call. Again, 1-800-864-7991. And The Quickening is kind of what I think we're going to talk about as the show continues this morning. How could we not? I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC.